This coming weekend, Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival presents three acts, two dancers, one radio host. A special pre-festival performance starring Ira Glass, the host and executive producer of the public radio program This American Life, Monica Bill Barnes, and fellow dancer and collaborator Anna Bass perform with Glass, bringing the unlikely art forms of talk radio and dance together. The engagement will be presented in the Ted Shawn Theater for two performances at the Pillow, June 13th at 8 o'clock and June 14th at 2. Three acts, two dancers, one radio host finds harmony in the partnership of Glass's trademark storytelling and Monica Bill Barnes's witty theatrical movement style. Dancers Barnes and Bass illustrate Glass's narration in three acts, which focus on performance as an occupation, artistic and romantic relationships, and a personal look at the lives of Bass, Barnes, and Glass. Ira Glass is a member of the National Radio Hall of Fame, the host and creator of This American Life, which has won the highest honors for broadcasting and journalistic excellence. The program's spinoff show Serial ran for 12 weeks last fall, quickly becoming a pop culture phenomenon and the most listened to podcast ever. It is a great pleasure to welcome Ira Glass back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Nice to be here. Here's what I noticed in that intro is that you call it the pillow. It's like you're on a second name basis with it.
they tend to refer to it as the pillow.
So this is my first time visiting, so I didn't know that that was true.
Yes, just referred to lovingly amongst those in the area as the pillow.
Okay.
How long have you been doing this? And this will be the what number time that you have performed this piece?
This will be, we were counting them off by the president. I think we're up to 44. And if I had prepared for this interview, I would have looked up once again to check which president that is. But it's somebody since Carter, I know.
Okay. So has it changed dramatically over that period of time? Does it change in the pieces, or is it a fairly set piece?
It's a very set piece. I mean, basically what's happening is that, you know, I'm talking and they're dancing. So every moment is choreographed and set. So, and, you know, there are lighting cues and costume changes, and it's a real show, you know, which is one of the things I like about it. And then there are several spots in the show where, thank God, I'm allowed to ad-lib. And so I ad-lib in every one of those spots because I feel like I'm not a professional performer in the same way that the dancers are or an actor is. Like, I feel like I'm more of a civilian person who gets up on stage and, like, I cannot say the same thing every single time I get on stage.
So one wonders how this comes to be, of how this sort of peanut butter and chocolate combination comes about.
I mean, I saw them perform, and I thought that there was something in what they did, Monica, Bill Barnes, and Anna Bass, the performers who I'm doing this with. I saw them perform, and I just thought, like, there's something in the sensibility of it that feels exactly like the sensibility of the radio show. And I thought, if I could get them in front of our audience, I bet our audience would really dig them. And the first thing we did together is basically I concocted an event that we beamed into movie theaters where they did a bunch of dances and we had some, you know, and it was an episode of This American Life where in between the stories these guys would dance. And so that was the first thing. And then Monica suggested maybe we could do something together where we combine stories and dance in a different way. And that's how it happened.
How did you decide on the particular stories that you were going to use for this performance?
I mean, Monica and I each made a long list of, like, I went back into the archive of things we've done on the radio show and just looked for stories where the story contained movement, you know, in some way that could be physically manifest. And to say that, I have to say, like what they do, they don't illustrate the stories with movement, but generally what has to happen is that, I mean, it's interesting. Some of the stories, like, there was a story that we didn't use that was about a guy who was on a guy who was the airport shuttle. He drove the airport shuttle at Logan Airport, and it was the day that he was retiring, and his nephew went on the last shuttle ride with him. So he had done this loop four times an hour for the last 28 years, like just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. Mm-hmm. And this was the last loop, and he recorded him on this ride, and it's very sweet. And Monica and Anna happen to have a dance where they run in a circle for a long part of it, and it's sort of a spectacular dance, actually. Where that's just one of the things that happens. And we thought, well, these two things can go together. We've got a guy who's driving in a circle, and we've got dancers who are running in a circle doing this other stuff. And it's just like somehow it was just very static. It just did not work at all. Like for some reason. And then other things that we would put together, like where I would have a piece. Like one of the most beautiful moments in the show is there's a poet named Donald Hall who wrote a book about his wife dying. And he has anecdotes from like the last few days of her life. And Monica and Anna have a dance that they do on a kitchen table. Like, you know, a fully set kitchen table where they're in house coats, and it's very beautiful and sad and slow. That just was beautiful set against that. And we basically looked for interesting juxtaposition of things and things where the dance would heighten it, but where the dance wouldn't literally, you know, illustrate the thing in the stories. That seemed like that would be corny, you know, to like literally illustrate what was happening. It's almost like the dance tells a second story.
Right.
Whose feeling informs the spoken story.
It seems as though you are one of the few people who actually have experience with this of image, both in the television version of This American Life and in this show, of adding a visual to a radio product.
Yes.
And I find that fascinating because I know, being a radio guy, that when I'm doing an interview, even when I'm talking to you, I will often just shut my eyes so I can just hear your voice and I can focus solely in on that. So there is that idea of you want them to experience something else, but experience the voice and the story that you are telling as well. How do you not lose that?
How do you not lose the spoken part?
Yes.
The words. Weirdly, and I think people who edit sound who edit movies would tell you that if you have words over top of image, the words become the primary thing the thing is about, and the image always supports the words. And we found that when we did TV, we would do these TV documentary stories. For 2 years, we did a television version of our show on the Showtime Network, And it was just incredibly beautiful the way that it was shot. Like we had a cinematographer who just was really amazing, but the words totally dominate it. And so you never have to worry about that. The thing about whether or not the story and the words will dominate. What you have to worry about is sometimes it can get confusing if the two things are in conflict, and then if the images get too interesting, sometimes people would just stop listening. And so you have to know when to shut up. But I feel like, but it's all that is pretty simple. And it's interesting, like in the TV, we also were in a situation where we didn't want the pictures to simply illustrate what the words were doing.
Right.
We felt like, well, if we're doing that, then we could just do, you know, there's something very like kid theater about that. But you want the images to actually add dimension and feeling and heart.
What is there about this that is different than you going out, perhaps, as I've seen you do, go out on a stage show where it's just you and an iPad and you are playing people excerpts from the show? And I guess my question more specifically is, do you get a sense from doing that of how the audience responds to different things that helps you when you relate something in a dance or in a different way?
It's different in a bunch of different ways. Like usually when I go out and give a speech about the radio show, the subject of the talk is the radio show. And so
right.
I'm talking about how we put the show together and things like that. And then the clips of tape I'm playing are illustrations of this point or that point that I'm making about the show. Whereas the dance show is much more like a real episode of the radio show. Like it is just an experience in and of itself, where we have a series of stories that link to each other in ways that you can feel. And it's mainly like just a very, like, you know, just like the radio show, it's designed to be really, really funny in certain parts and then very emotional. And if anything, it feels like the very most emotional episodes of the show. And one of the things that I feel aware of is when we're advertising to public radio audiences, for most people, when you say like come out to a dance show, their first response, I think most people, is not to go, wow, that would be amazing. I would love to see a dance show. You know what I mean? It's like inviting people to a poetry reading or
right.
some other, you know, art form that is beloved by some but not beloved by most. And so we've taken pains to say, like, well, no, what this is. Like, one of the reasons why I was attracted to Monica and Anna is that their work is super accessible and really fun to watch and feels like the radio show. And so the whole evening basically just feels like a sort of supercharged episode of This American Life.
I have to ask you, you were here in Troy, New York a few years ago, and you were on stage and you were talking about the radio show, and you played a clip of the shark attack story. Young woman, New Zealand, who was bitten by a shark. And at one point, you were telling that many people responded negatively to this when you aired it on the radio.
Well, they liked the story. They to say they responded negatively.
No,
you mean they got sick.
That's right. They had a
out.
Physical ailment as a result of hearing the story. Okay, so during that, a guy passes out in the audience, which is now he's fine, by the way, but he passes out in the audience.
Yeah, so, I learned an important thing about playing that piece of tape. I thought, well, it's only like 1,000 people here in the audience or 1,500 people. So, like, what are the odds that, you know, because, you know, we heard that like 4 or 5 people passed out
right.
of our audience of 3.5 million. So I feel like, well, you know, statistically, like, I'm in very good shape here. Like, I can play this for this audience. And yeah, no, a guy passed out.
So do you still do it?
I do play that story, but I don't play the part that makes people pass out. I learned an important lesson that night of just, I really need to be more cautious. And no one has passed out since. I've been telling that story on stage now and then, since then. And yeah, like there've been no casualties.
Now, since that time, I've been telling the story of what happened in a class that I teach at my alma mater here in Albany, the College of St. Rose. And, you know, as you said at the time, you know, the sample size is pretty small. Well, then lo and behold, last semester, I'm playing it in front of 18 kids, and a kid ditches.
Ditches? You mean they pass out?
Yeah. Pass out cold. Dead away. So this is a long way of me asking of how much have you looked into that, maybe specifically, but more, even more generally, as to how people listen and how people react to your words and what it is that can cause various reactions.
Well, that's certainly like the weirdest response we've ever gotten to anything on the show. And it's happened once in 19 years. You know, like, and honestly, like when you hear the material that made people pass out, you know, most people have no reaction to it at all. Like, I never would have guessed that somebody would pass out. I mean, it was just sort of like a kind of graphic description of a medical thing that's happening to this woman after she gets bit by a shark. And not even when she gets bit by the shark, it's sort of like afterwards she sees a doctor and like it sort of happens there. To speak to your bigger point, like, how much do we think about people's reaction? A little. Like I feel like it's more like I feel like in making a radio show or making anything, you just want to adhere to the golden rule and not make anything that you yourself wouldn't be interested to listen to. And then the things that my staff and I find disturbing or discomforting, we assume other people will too. And we deal with those. We take those out or we try to prepare people for them. And you know, we don't edit the show by like focus grouping it or anything like that. Like, we edit it to our taste,
sure,
which is the way most things are made. And, you know, just assume like, you know, I mean, I feel like we think about the audience for sure, but we think about the audience as being like sort of just like us and don't feel like we need to talk down to people or pander to them or something.
With that idea of the audience and thinking about the audience, did you have any idea that Serial would catch on in the way that it did?
Oh my God, it's just the opposite. Like, we just thought like this would be this little thing that we make that's an experiment for us. And our hope was like if we could just get 300,000 people to listen, which sounds like a huge number, I know, but like
right.
for broadcasting, you know, like where millions of people listen, like it's you know, it's a lovely audience to have, but like, you know, for something national, like it's not super large. And we just thought like if we could get 300 people to listen, if we're that lucky, then maybe we'll figure out a way to pay for itself. Like, we get underwriting and things like that. Like, that'll be a big enough audience that could pay for itself. But literally, that was our only goal. We really did not think it was going to be so popular. And honestly, like the fact that it was a podcast seemed like a problem before we put it out. Like like Julie Snyder, the senior producer of the show, and who edits and created Serial with Sarah Koenig, the host. She tells a story about, like, a couple weeks before the show went out, she had a family wedding to go to, and she kept trying to explain to her relatives, like, it's a podcast. And they're like, well, what is, how do I get that? Like, how do, what is it?
Sure.
You know, she'd be, like, downloading apps to their phones. And finally she said to them, like, look, forget it. You can sit this one out. Like, you don't need to hear this one. And then the first article written about it before it ran, like, Mother Jones the magazine did an article that was published, I think even just online. I didn't think we'd saying, like, hey, this is a new podcast from the creators of This American Life. And the comments begin with a woman being like, well, wait, so how do I watch that on my TV? And then people being like, no, it's not on your TV. A podcast isn't on your TV. And we just thought, like, oh, my God, nobody knows how to hear a podcast. And so our expectations were very, very low. And, And so we were very, very surprised.
Did it affect the storytelling in any way that suddenly you had a huge audience and people almost became, you know, obsessed with the story itself and almost helping you all in solving this?
The main way that it affected the storytelling is that I hope that they don't mind me saying this, it kind of freaked out Sarah and Julie.
Hmm.
Like, it just was suddenly like this level of scrutiny that none of us had anticipated. Like, you know what I mean? Like, nobody had done a Saturday Night Live sketch about it. I think anything on This American Life, and the fact that, like, there was a Saturday Night Live sketch about it was just like, what's happening? And then, you know, there were people on Reddit and elsewhere who, you know, there were five podcasts about our podcast, like five podcasts where they would put out an episode every week after we put out an episode where they would summarize and comment on our episode. But I have to say, like, Sarah had researched the thing so thoroughly. I don't think we got any leads from any of that stuff at all, from Reddit or from anybody else. Like people were bringing stuff up, but we knew the stuff that people were bringing up. You know what I mean? Like, so yeah. It wasn't like it led to big story points at all.
Let's go back.
Though it did lead to people coming out of the woodwork. That was the one thing that it did. Like our hope was that as we were putting these out into the world, people would come forward who had been reluctant to talk to us. And that definitely happened.
And do you think of a long-term effect? I mean, obviously, you're working on a new series is being worked on. And so now you have a little bit of an idea of what you're getting yourself into.
I mean, I think that the 7 million people who have heard every episode of Serial will be curious to hear what we're doing for season 2. Which will come out in the fall, and so they'll at least check out the first episode. I feel like we can pretty much count on that. But beyond that, we have no idea if they'll stick around for episode 2. And we're doing something very different.
Which I assume you're not at liberty to talk about.
No.
Okay. As far as 3 acts, 2 dancers, and 1 radio host, what do you hope people take away from that experience at The Pillow?
I mean, The Pillow is a place... And I say The Pillow, even though I've never been there and I've never used the phrase The Pillow before. The Pillow, I'm informed, is a place where a lot of important modern dance happened, and a place of experimentation and discovery. And this show, in its own modest, very, very modest way, is an attempt to invent something for dance and to combine dance with something that nobody's tried to combine it with a tone and in a way that nobody has before. And I feel like the audience definitely feels like when we began making the show, Monica and Anna and I, like, we really had no idea if it was going to work and what it would mean. And one of the things that we talk about, that I talk about in the show, is like, here's something we tried and we want to show it to you. You know, like, this feeling of like, nobody's ever tried to combine these particular things. And what you're seeing is our attempt at it. And I think one of the things that's really nice is that I feel like at a certain point, there's a moment in the show where you feel like the audience starts to trust us, and they're like, oh, this is actually kind of cool. Like, when they see, like, the number of things that we've invented. And so I feel like, you know, I think people have a nice experience in that way. And I feel like, you know, what do people get out of it? I feel like it's very much what people get from, like, a regular episode of the radio show. Like, it feels like that.
Jacob's Pillow Dance Festival presents three acts, two dancers, one radio host in the Ted Chaun Theater for two performances. June 13th at 8 o'clock, June 14th at 2 o'clock. You can find out more information by going to jacobspillow.org, jacobspillow.org. Ira Glass, always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you very much, and best of luck.
Always a pleasure to talk to you, too. Thank
Great.
You so much.
Thank you very much. Again, you can find out more information about three acts, two dancers, one radio host this weekend at Jacob's Pillow, the 13th at 8, the 14th at 2, jacobspillow.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.